Are you struggling transitioning from indoor obedience training to out there in the real world? Stick around for today's episode. That's exactly what we're going to help you with. Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast. I want to talk about a few skills today that I find are really, really helpful in transitioning from indoor work to outdoor work.
Okay.
And a lot of the times, this is a challenging piece for anybody with a dog, because inside, your dog gets used to the distractions inside, and it becomes non-novel and a moot point that there's something exciting on the other side of the room potentially. So we have an easier time getting our puppy's attention when we're indoors. And then, of course, we can't live our lives indoors.
Nope.
So we need to transition to outdoors. And a lot of the times that will really derail the process, which I just want to say is normal. It's absolutely normal that your puppy's going to be more distracted outside than they are inside. You know, all the novel sniffs, all the excitement, etc. And I also want to say that there's going to be a messy piece to training. You know, it is not going to ever be perfect. You're not going to ever go from, okay, we've started our skills indoors and now we're moving outside. There's never going to be a dog that goes, okay, I can give you 100% perfection right off the bat.
Right.
There's going to be a little bit of messy stuff in there that you have to say, you know what? Hey, I'm talking to you. Maybe give them a little touch to get their attention, you know? Maybe moving to a slightly less distracting environment will help you. But if that's not an option, you still need to train the dog, you know? And it's not that we're waiting for them to make good choices in that moment. They're not capable of making those good choices yet. We're directing their behavior. So I'm going to use all of the skills that I've started indoors already. I'm going to use those skills and I'm going to use the training system that I am working on to guide my puppy. So for example, if my puppy's so busy sniffing the floor that I say sit and they don't understand how to sit in that scenario, the last thing I'd ever want to do is go, he's too distracted. He can't do it.
Right.
No, I'm going to help him do it.
Right.
Right. So I might shorten up on my leash and place him in the sit. And then he's probably going to get up again. Right. So I might place him back again. And then what's going to happen?
He'll probably get up again.
Yeah, exactly. So this will be an ongoing thing until he goes, oh, okay, well, I'm no longer able to get to that thing on the floor. I'm not sniffing the thing on the floor. So what are you doing up there? And then, of course, I have better attention. But I've had to insist. And you know what? That is normal.
Right. It's persistence that you need in dog training.
Exactly. It is going to happen. They're not going to go from indoors to outdoors and go, oh, I just want to pay attention to you. Their instinct will drive them to sniff and look around and want to explore and all of that stuff. And we can let them do that at certain points.
Right. Definitely.
Right?
Yes.
There is absolutely nothing. Like, a lot of the times people will think, well, you know, let him be a dog. Let him sniff. Absolutely. Let them be a dog. They need an opportunity to interact and engage with the world. But that needs to happen when it's an appropriate time. Yes. So we want to set a precedent that they need to let us give them permission for that. So I definitely am not giving my puppy permission to do that if I've asked him to do something else and he's not accomplished that thing. You know, that is not the time. So if I say sit, my puppy's so busy sniffing, and then I go, oh, let him sniff. He needs to interact with the world. I'm basically undermining my efforts.
Right, yeah, right? Because the puppy heard you say sit.
Yeah.
And the puppy says, your voice doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. And the last thing I want to do is teach my puppy to ignore me. It's so easy to do.
Yes.
People do it all the time. They do it by expecting their dogs to understand their language without having time to teach them. And then, of course, our dogs go, well, that word doesn't mean anything. So I'm just going to continue to ignore it. Maybe that's it, but maybe it's come.
Yeah. Well, you hear it at the park. A dog will be running around and not coming when it's called. And the person says, he always comes at home.
Yeah. Yeah, and we believe it.
Right, yeah, it's like, of course he does. Yeah, he's used to being at home, but look at all these fun distractions here at the park.
Exactly, and that's not an acceptable response to not coming, but it's also the response that you're getting because, why? Because did you take the time to train come at the park? Or did you just hope that because he can come from the backyard, he's going to be able to come at the park? But and like, why is that line of thinking so confusing?
Right, I guess because when a human learns something, we retain it differently. Yeah, so
I think that's exactly it. We are not situational learners like our dogs are.
Right.
You know, if I learn to drive on a Chevy, I can get into a Ford and I can figure out that even though the steering wheel controls look different, it still drives the same way. There's still a gas pedal on the right and the left, et cetera. our dogs would need specific training as the situation changed. Mm-hmm. And that's not for everything forever, but it's until they've figured out how to sort of generalize that behavior. Yes. So I need to do sits in my kitchen, sits on my front lawn, sits at the park, sits at the vet's office, sits at the training school. I need to do sits and be consistent with the information of asking my dog to sit, following through if he doesn't, et cetera, in all those places before he starts to generalize behavior. And then I can go to a new spot and I'll be able to get sit with minimal effort in that new spot. Right. But I have to take some time to go to different locations, have different situations, and work these behaviors with my dog that way as well. Right. One of the skills that we really like to teach our young dogs, or I do anyways, really like to teach our young dogs is a hand tap. What about you?
Yes, I've taught hand taps. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Why do you teach a hand tap? What are some of your main motivators?
Well, my hand is always with me. And my dog's nose is always there. So it's always something that is handy to do, and I can get
handy
my dogs
to do.
Yeah, it's an easy way to get your dog's focus. It's a fun skill to teach, and everything's always there for them to do that. So it's not like, oh, I forgot a toy, or oh, I forgot my treats. It's like my hand's always there.
So what, in a nutshell, what's a hand tap?
A hand tap is when your dog touches their nose to your hand.
Perfect.
Your palm of your hand.
Perfect. Okay. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that. I realized that we kind of get ahead of ourselves sometimes and don't think about the nitty gritties, but I'm sure there's people going, what are they talking about? What's a hand tap? So yeah, literally I want to be able to put my hand anywhere and say tap and have my dog drive their nose into my hand a little bit, right? This is a great way of getting my dog's focus. Mm-hmm. It's a great way of moving
them
into
positions.
A lot of the times it's a great way of rewarding a dog because they learn to associate value with those things. Mm-hmm. So teaching this thing, I'm going to start that in my house, right? I'm going to start that by basically, I might pinch a piece of food in my hand, and that would be a good cheat because chances are if I've pinched a piece of food between my fingers, chances are my puppy is going to sniff to investigate that. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I feel him make contact with my hand, I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to release that treat. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, I could just stick my hand out empty. And in all likelihood, most puppies are going to go, hey, what's that?
Right.
What do you got? You got something interesting? And they're going to do the same thing. They're probably going to investigate, sniff. And if you use good timing and you say yes as you feel that
and
touch,
your puppy understands what yes means.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
So you need to first teach your puppy what yes means.
Yeah. Perfect point for sure. So if they do reach in, they touch, I say yes, and then I'm going to feed my puppy where his nose touched, right? So I'm going to feed him at that palm level. And that's going to build value for that touch. So he's going to say, oh, you know what? That's kind of neat, right? We learn cause and effect, right? We pull the slot machine, the things go. We get that little rush when things go and maybe there might be a win. We pull the slot machine, it comes out. So we're used to this cause and effect thing. It's the same thing with our dogs, essentially, in a nutshell, right?
Right.
They get the idea that I touch my nose to your hand and the payout comes, right? So then this becomes valuable. Now we can put it on cue. Just before I put my hand, or just when I put my hand out, just before my puppy is about to go and touch it, I'm going to say tap or whatever my cue is that I want. My puppy's going to tap it because I know he's going to do it at that point. I'm going to yes and reward. And then I very quickly can create this behavior that helps my dog understand how to engage with my hand. And this is such a simple skill to teach, but it really is a handy one.
Yes.
It really is handy because I can focus my dog with it. I can move my dog around. So here's one cheat skill, right? I've built value with it inside. I go outside onto the driveway. My dog's so busy sniffing the ground that, you know, sit isn't really that appealing to him. But maybe I can give him a little touch, get his attention and go, oh, hi there. How are you? And then say tap. And have him touch his nose to my hand, and then I can get in some rewards for that. So that valuable thing is going to be an easier behavior to get because my puppy has this great history with it, and it's a fun behavior. It directs his head, you know, all sorts of reasons that that's valuable for
and
me.
And I think a lot of times, too, like my Saluki, I had to approach training a bit differently sometimes, and I think she felt it put her in charge. I would put my hand out, and she'd say, ha, if I touch it with my nose, you got to give me a treat, lady. And I think it gave her a little bit of like, look at me go here. And it really helped if there was a squirrel or something like that. I could just put my hand out and say tap, and she'd start tapping my hand and looking
at me
for the
treat. Your hand or the dog?
The squirrel wouldn't. The squirrel wouldn't. Yeah, the dog. But it, so it got me past squirrels sometimes.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because that is one of the biggest things that I use it for. Not necessarily the squirrels, but for passing other dogs on the street.
Yep.
Right? I mean, people often will make their lives a lot harder by letting their dogs actually engage with other dogs out there on the street. And then, of course, every dog becomes a dog that our dogs want to engage with. So I want you to be really selective about your dog's playmates. Dogs do not need to say hello to every dog out there in the street. And it's actually detrimental for your training and their manners to do so. Because if they expect it, then they're going to start getting more and more excited and aroused just at the sight of another dog. And that rarely works out well for you in the long term. So keep that in mind. In a perfect world, we want our dogs to have manners and be able to pass other dogs without having to engage with them. You know, not all dogs are going to be the ones that you want your dogs to engage with. And really, if you're out there to walk your dog, they don't need to say hello to every dog out there. I'm really selective about my dog's playmates. If anybody ever says, oh, my dog's friendly, I just say mine's not and I keep walking. Or if I have that dog coming towards me, I'll often say something like, oh, my dog's just getting over kennel cough. And people usually get their dogs in and under control quite quickly there. But I use the hand tap as a really good sort of in-between gauge when I'm working with a younger dog. So already, when I'm walking on the street, I'm always walking with my dog in heel position. You know, they don't have to stare at me with rapt attention, but they're not allowed to stop and lift their legs on things. They're not allowed to, you know, stop and sniff anything for a prolonged period of time. And I know that there's people out there right now saying, oh, she's so mean. The dog needs to stop and sniff. Well, the dog gets a chance to stop and sniff once I get to the park or once I get to the space that I'm going that I know is going to be a safe spot for them to wander and sniff and pee. Then I'll say, okay, go sniff. And I release my dogs and they get to be dogs at that point. But they don't have to be dogs out on the sidewalk. And I don't like them lifting their legs on things. I don't want my dogs lifting their legs on people's bushes or shrubs. And, you know, truly, I would never get anywhere on the walk because I have boys and they're intact and they love to mark. So,
and that's their working time. They're they're working with you to get to the park.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I'm working with a young dog and they're in heel position and another dog comes along, inevitably there's interest, of course. You know, they get used to the idea that over time, they never get to investigate those dogs. So the interest fades and then it ends up being a nice mannerly situation where really they don't even bother trying because it's never an option for
them. And that's important for us as obedience instructors. We're always walking our dogs amongst our class dogs. And we wouldn't want our dogs jumping out to see every dog.
Yeah, definitely.
They see a lot of dogs during the day, our dogs,
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll use that hand tap a lot because it's already so valuable, so reinforcing. I can stick it out at my side and have my dog easily hand tap while they're in heel position. And then I can reward. And as that other dog's passing, I can be engaging my dog. They know that there's another dog there. They see it. But I'm saying, pay attention to me instead. There's valuable things coming from me. The value is not in that other dog because I'm not going to let you go and play with that other dog. The value is in me here. So pay attention. And that hand tap really helps to bridge that gap.
Right, yes.
It also will often, I find, help me to get my dog's attention if I do have a moment where I say, okay, go sniff. And, you know, maybe he stops and there's a dog in the park and he's staring at that dog. And I might, you know, I might just walk up behind him and go tap and stick my hand out. So now I've turned his attention back to me.
Right, yes.
Are there any spaces that you use the tap that you can think of?
I like to use it in the vet's office while I'm waiting.
Ooh, I love
so
that.
Many people sit at the vet's office and they don't engage with their dog other than, you know, patting them. But I like to give my dogs little jobs at the vet's office.
Me too.
It keeps their brain from worrying about, you know, maybe what's going to be happened. So I, you know, use that hand tap. You know, I move my hand over here, I move it over there, the dog's moving. A moving dog can't sit and focus on being nervous.
Yeah, it's true. That's a really, really good point. I also, like, I like to use those opportunities for a little bit of training because I know that when I'm working with a young dog, chances are it's not the last time they're going to the vet.
Right, yes.
So I want to set a precedent that you either are working with me or you're chilling out and lying down and being good as gold, which, of course, is what I expect of my older dogs. As they get older and they get more training and understanding under their belt, I have more expectations for them to be able to just turn off when I say lie down.
Right.
For them to be able to just relax and take in what's going on around them without needing to engage with the other dogs, et cetera, et cetera. So I like to have those, I like to use those opportunities for training, right? I'm already there. I'm already waiting in the waiting room.
Might as well. Let's do something.
Exactly. And it really helps the dogs to understand that that location, that situation specifically is not about the other dogs. It's not about, you know, trying to engage or interact with all the other dogs. It's still about listening to me and my direction. You know, I want to be able to get my dog up on the scale and ask for a sit and not have to struggle with that. I need to be able to move from the chair in the waiting room into the exam room without my dog trying to visit every dog in the waiting room. So it's a good precedent setter to practice some skills when you're waiting. Yeah, so
definitely.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. All righty. The other cheat skill. Oh. Can you take a guess?
Maybe a little game of tug of war.
Tug. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, absolutely. And tug is such a great way of interacting with your dog. Mm-hmm. You get that adrenaline rush with them when you pull out a toy.
Right.
So how do you use tug when you're out and about?
Well, I sometimes use my leash as the tug. Now that requires permission, of course, from me, but, you know, I don't always bring a tug toy with me on a walk. And something extra to carry. So I will often use my leash as the tug toy. So I will say to the dog, tug, and I'll kind of snap my leash and up they jump and we have a little game of tug and then out and then that game is over. So I've gotten their focus. Maybe we're passing a distraction, you know, or I just need that little extra focus on me. Yeah. Maybe while I'm, you know, chit-chatting with a neighbor, if the dog's plays tug quietly. If they're a big growler, I'm not going to do that. But but yeah, so I tend to use my leash on a walk, but I would never allow my dog to grab the leash without my permission. So no, it's a whole different ballgame a bit. Yes.
Yeah. And that's one of the things with tug that is really important to note is that we often use it to establish rules. Like you can't do it until I've given you permission and you need to take it once I've given you permission, but not before. Mm-hmm. And you need to drop it once I've asked for you to drop it. And then you shouldn't re-engage with it until I have asked you to re-engage again. And
And I should mention the leash is still on the dog while I play tug.
Gotcha.
Yes. Yeah. The dog never comes off the leash. I just use the top part of it and we have a game of tug. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and it's so nice to have that option, right? If you have a dog that likes to grab the leash on their own, I would definitely put a stop to that. I would never allow my dog to just grab the leash on their own and do their thing. Mm-hmm. But invited, it's you usually have one.
Right. Yeah.
It's a great way of having a quick little interaction with them and then working your outer drop it and carrying on from there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll use my leash too. I actually have special leashes that are more tug toy like so that they can suit that purpose.
Yes, you see a lot of agility dogs are wearing a leash that doubles as a tug toy.
They're so fun. I don't usually walk my dog on those leashes, but they're there for that purpose as well. And it's a great way of making sure that the engagement factor can happen. And I can reinforce my dog for looking at me, focusing on me. Mm-hmm. But I can use my toy to reward other behaviors as well. So for example, I might call my dog's name. And in a distracting environment, if my dog responds to their name nicely, that could be a great opportunity for me to say, yes, pull out my tug toy and have a little play and fun with the dog. So if you have a dog that has been trained to like toys or naturally likes toys, you have an extra reward to use in situations where the stimulation might be up. And the nice thing about that is that it sort of doubles as fulfillment for that stimulation.
Right.
Yes. So if, for example, my dog is keying in on a squirrel and all they can think in their mind is prey. Oh, I want to go and eat it. I want to chase it. Right. I want to grab it. I want to eat it. Mm-hmm. And they don't get to do that in our worlds, right? Like most of us, most of us don't, you know, I'm sure there's lots of farm dogs that fulfill their desire to take out the squirrels quite a bit.
Yeah, or Jack Russells that catch mice and rats.
For sure. And you know what? I'm sure there's lots of farm dogs that's their job and they're expected to keep the vermin at bay. Right. So, you know, they get that fulfillment. But most of us in our lives, we don't get to fulfill like that. Yes. So if my dog is looking for that, you know, opportunity to chase down and grab, and I have a toy that I can use to say, hey, grab this instead.
Right, yes.
That starts to fulfill that desire. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the ways that we end up conditioning our dogs to focusing on us when there are things like squirrels.
Right.
Is by making sure that they understand that's off limits. You never get to actually get to that thing.
Right.
But if you focus on me, you know what? You get to tug on this leash and we're going to play with some of those prey behaviors right now, some of those predatory behaviors that are getting you pumped up and excited. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you outlet for that right now.
Right.
And then I've got that under control, right? I've got this great way of saying to my dog, I got you. Mm-hmm. I can take care of that need for you. Here it is right here. And now after a bunch of repetition, like I said, it conditions the dog. So now he might see a squirrel and he might be thinking about me and my tug toy instead.
Right.
Because again, that you never got to do, mm-hmm. but this you got to do a lot of,
right.
and it was really fun, and it was a great outlet when you're feeling that need to right, grab yes. and chase and get, you know. Mm-hmm.
I'll use it too if there's a sudden startle. So maybe we're walking along the street and suddenly like a cement truck goes by and there's like a huge rattle and the dog kind of panics for that second. It's like, oh, wasn't that a fun noise? Let's tug, 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 tug.
Whoa, yes, I love that.
So the dog says, oh, when we hear big noises, it's not scary. It's fun. We get to tug. So I'll use it too to, you know, if the dog suddenly has startled or is a bit afraid, I can bring them out and make it a good moment with the tug of war.
Perfect. Perfect. I absolutely love that. That's a really good thought for things as well.
Yeah. So, I used to do the same, something similar. My Sheltie loved to undo my shoelaces.
Ooh.
And so I ended up putting it on command, and that was a fun game for her. So I could move my foot around really fast, and she would chase my shoe until she got a hold of my shoelace and then undid it.
Ah.
So that was a fun game for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't always have shoelaces, but I always got a shoe on. So, hey. Well, not always in the house, but... She would also pull your socks off, too, in the house with permission.
Always have a shoe on. Even when you're sleeping, when you're bathing, when you're showering,
always wear a shoe.
Are you looking for a plan to help transition from indoors to outdoors with your puppy where you lose their attention completely? Come and work with us in the Life Skills online program. Myself and the rest of the McCann Dogs instructors are eager to help you with your training journey. We talked about earlier, you know, going out in the driveway and expecting your dog to make you the choice is probably not going to happen.
Right.
But as you continue to build your training efforts, you will get to the point where your dog will have started to shift the value thinking from the external world. You know, as long as that's not where they're getting all their value, right? If they are constantly blowing you off to sniff and, you know, that's their value in life is sniffing the ground and ignoring your voice, they're probably not going to make a choice to choose you. However, if you've put in the time, if you've put in the training, and if you've reacted appropriately to them saying, not going to do the thing that you asked me to do by helping them understand. It's not optional. I'm not asking, you know, I'm not going to be overly rough, but I am going to say, if I've asked you to sit, I expect you to sit.
Right.
It's important that our dogs understand that our expectations need to be met, because if my dog's running towards the road and there's a car coming and he thinks that come is optional,
right.
That's a problem.
Yes.
And if he thinks that any of my commands are optional, he's going to think that potentially all of my commands are optional. And when the competing motivator or the distraction is strong enough, he is going to choose that distraction over me any day of the week.
Right.
You know, and that's just the nature of dogs. It's not that we love them to pieces because they're so honest. So we need to look at them in that way of them providing us honest feedback. You know, I'm going to rely on my instincts over listening if the option is there. So if we teach them that there's no option by being consistent with them every day and by making sure that we hold them accountable when we ask them to do something and they don't, then we have a good chance of them making choices when they need to.
Yes.
And we have a much better chance of being able to call them off squirrels, etc., if they know that they're going to be held accountable for their behavior and that they need to listen because they've been taught systematically, right? I'm going to teach you. If you try to ignore a recall, we're going to have lessons to make sure that you understand that is not an option because it's such an important thing. It's a crucial, crucial thing. So anyways, I sort of went babbling there.
That was a good babble.
It was a good babble.
Good babble.
Yay. So when we get to the point where we're asking our dogs to make choices in our direction. So for example, maybe I have my adolescentish age dog and I walk out of the house and I stand on the front porch and I just wait, right? Instead of coaching my dog at that point and saying, hey, you pay attention to me, get in, sit, look at me, and then off I go. Maybe I might get to a point with my dog where I walk out the door and close the door behind me and then I just wait for a second. You know, obviously if my dog's pulling or anything like that, I'm going to address that.
Right.
But if I've just walked out on the front porch, there's no problem with my dog looking around at the neighborhood to say, oh, what's going on out here this morning? It's natural for him to do so and I wouldn't expect him to do anything else. But if nothing happens in terms of me progressing to move on that walk and he goes, oh, what's going on here? And then kind of looks back to me to say, hey, like, what are we doing? Are we going? Can we go?
Right.
Then if at that point I say, yes, what a good choice. And I feed my dog a little piece of cheese. He really likes cheese. that's going to build value for saying, oh, I'm going to make a choice to look at you instead of looking at the world. Mm-hmm. So now I'm conditioning. Again, I'm conditioning my dog to see value in me versus seeing value in everything else in the world.
Right.
And like the value in the rest of the world is going to be natural for the dog anyway. So I'm balancing that out by saying, guess what? It's really valuable to pay attention to me too. What are some places, where are some places that you might allow your young dog to start making choices?
Well, one of the, I've used this in the car. We had one dog that was very, didn't like riding in the car. And I had my son, the dog was in a crate and in a van, and my son was sitting beside the crate in a seatbelt, of course. And what I had my son do was every time the dog lied down in this crate to drop a treat in.
Okay.
And so instead of the dog up and stress panting and, you know, turning and that, the dog learned that, you know what, if I lay down, we had really good treats, would get dropped down into the crate for me to eat. And the dog eventually, no problems at all, would ride in the car, get in the crate, lie down. You know, Ty always had some treats for him and he would randomly drop them in when he felt the dog was doing well. So that worked really well. The dog made the choice on his own to get those rewards rather than me, you know, calling out from the front while I'm trying to drive, like, lie down, lie down.
Perfect.
It was the dog making the choice.
Well, and here's the thing with that as well. If you yell from the front seat, lie down, and the dog goes, nope, what are you going to do about that?
Exactly, right.
So
yes.
It's not a good thing to, especially when you have a dog that's in training, right? If I have an adult dog who has a really reliable lie down and I say lie down from the front seat and I expect that he's going to, then that's a different scenario. But if I have a young dog who's still in training, so we talk about waiting for the dog to be in the right mindset to make the choice. So as an example in this scenario, if this young dog is bouncing and barking in the crate, chances are he's not ever going to offer the lie down. So at that point, waiting for the dog to make a choice is not going to pay off because it's not going to allow us that right choice that we can build value for. But if the dog is close enough and if the dog has been reinforced enough for lying down in the crate in scenarios, you know, maybe this is not even a situation where the dog's in the crate and you're driving. Maybe it's a situation where you're just setting this up.
Set it up, yeah.
So that you can get the right choice. So maybe the stimulation comes along when the actual motion of the car happens.
Right.
So if that's the case, what would that look like?
Then I would have another adult drive while I am in the back working with the dog.
I love how you qualified for that. Another adult drive. You wouldn't switch places with Ty and his
car seat at that point. So I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to enlist a friend. I'm going to say, hey, Shannon, can you help me with this issue? And then I'm going to be in the back, or I'm going to, you know, Shannon being another trainer, or I'm going to ask Shannon to help the dog out. So
perfect.
Yes, I'm going to set it up.
Yeah. So if you want your dog to make the right choices, they need to be close enough to make that right choice. Because if you have to wait so long, if I'm standing on the porch with a young dog that hasn't had any opportunity to build value for me yet, and I'm waiting for him to look back at me, I might be waiting for 20 minutes.
Right.
I might be waiting for longer.
Right.
You know, I might grow old.
Right. Yep.
With an old, tiny beard.
Yep. I call to say, Shannon, why aren't you at work? I'm still waiting for the dog to look at me. Can't get off the porch.
So at that point, what would you do? So in that scenario, same scenario, dog's not ready to make the right choice yet. How are you getting that dog's attention?
Well, I might do something simple like shift my weight or cough or do something to get the dog to turn back.
Yeah, perfect. Or you might even take it one step further. Give the dog a little touch. Hey, pay attention to me for a second.
Right, yeah.
Or
a little poke in the side.
If this is a dog that is fairly new in my world and I know he's not ready to make a choice of me as the value, as the piece of value in his life, then maybe I'm still training in that scenario.
Right.
Actually, there's no maybe about it. I'm still training in that scenario.
Yep.
So now I am going to place my dog in the sit and then I'm going to use some food to create attention. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be a voluntary situation on the dog's part for them to benefit and start building value.
Right.
So maybe that scenario looks like this. I walk out on the porch 3 days in a row. I walk out on the porch and I place the sit and I show my dog a cookie and I draw it up to my face and then I say, look at me. Yes. And I deliver the food straight down to them. So for 3 days. And then for 2 days, I walk out on the porch and I say, look at me, without bringing the food up to my face. And my dog goes, oh, I recognize that cue now. It's been associated with this focus upwards. Mm-hmm. I say, look at me. My new dog looks at me and I say yes, and I give him a little jackpot for that, mm-hmm. for that reaction. So I'm not luring that time. I'm not saying, here's a cookie, and if I bring it up to my face and you keep looking at it, you'll get the food. I've done that for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Now I want to move on and make progress to the next step. So now I'm going to try just that verbal command. If my dog fails, you know, if I say, look at me without showing him the food, and my dog goes, I don't know what that means, and he's looking away mm-hmm. from me. All right, well, he's not ready for that yet. Okay, mm-hmm. so I'm going to go back to helping him, go right. back to training, whatever. Maybe I'll see if I can get the voluntary inside to create that situation. Yes. But what I'm hoping for is that my dog hears, look at me, and goes, oh, I remember that was valuable. And he looks up at me, and I can give him that little jackpot. Mm-hmm. And then so now we're at 5 days, right? Did I count right? 3 days, then 2 days. So now 2 days of look at me rewarding that. So now on the sixth day, look at that math. On the sixth day, I'm going to go out on the porch and I'm going to say nothing. And I'm going to see if my dog goes, okay, the last 5 days, it's been really valuable to look at you.
Yep.
And I have a much better chance at that point of my dog going, hey, what are you doing back there? Do I get a cookie for this attention?
Yep.
And of course, I'm going to capitalize on that. When he looks at me, I'm going to say, yes, you're the best dog ever. Maybe I pull out my tug toy mm-hmm. at that point, right? There's cheat number two.
Right.
Maybe I pull out my tug toy and have a little party
with
him.
Have a little party.
Maybe I just pull out food and say, you're the best dog ever. And I mm-hmm. give him that little piece of cheese again, or a little jackpot of cheese. All of those steps, right? It's not taken me a huge amount of time. But it has set the idea for my dog that if you look at me, it's valuable. And then he starts making choices on his own, right? And the choices are aligned with what I want him to do mm-hmm. instead of just being aligned with what he wants to do.
Right? Yes.
So we can shape through a little bit of that stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. I think.
Question time.
It's time to reach into the box. What's in the box?
Okay. Our large print questions. How many treats is reasonable to use for a single training session?
Three.
Yeah. Well, that's...
Six. 12.
There's no right or wrong answer. There's no right or wrong answer for that.
I would say, how big is your dog? How big are your treats?
Right. How long is your training session?
Yes. Has your dog just had dinner? What are you using? Like, there's so many things. I basically try to use my dog's food as much as possible. I'll use high value treats as well when I'm out and about mm-hmm. and there's challenging distractions. I try to keep it to a reasonable amount. This is one of the reasons that I really like to use toys in my training as mm-hmm. well. I like to use playtime as a reward in my training. You know, there's all sorts of things that aren't food that we can use to motivate our dogs.
Yes.
So if you can figure those things out, mm-hmm. You're away to the races.
I bring varying sizes of treats along with me too. So I might have a treat that's got a lot of smell to it, and I'll make those ones really, really tiny. Yeah. And so the dog basically is getting a great smell, and you know, smell is taste almost.
Yep.
But just the tiniest little treat. And then I might bring something a little bit bigger, maybe, but low calorie, that's got like a good kind of crunch and chew to it. So the dog says, oh, that was satisfying, that big crunch that they get from it. So I'm going to have different sizes and tiny, smelly, you know, crunchy. So the dog has a wide variety, and I'm going to kind of choose at the moment, which one should my dog get at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. I would say that if you are noticing that your dog is putting on weight, you need to look critically at how many treats they're getting. Mm-hmm. If you are feeding appropriate amounts of food and they're putting on weight, it's probably the treats. If you are feeding, if you're using kibble as part of your treats, that's a nice way of taking some of the calorie content out of there. And I usually try to stick to what I know the dog's ration is going to be for the day, right? Rather than using the... rather than using the quantities on the bag even, I will keep an eye on my dog's weight from a day-to-day perspective. Mm-hmm. And especially with puppies, because they tend to, I don't feed the same amount to a puppy all day, every day.
Right.
Do you?
No.
I'm constantly adjusting their quantity of food based on what they feel like, what mm-hmm. they look like, because sometimes they have growth spurts and all of a sudden they're skinny as rails and you're like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I need to feed you more. And then other times, they're just coasting along, and all of a sudden they're pudgy.
Right.
Right. So a puppy, I always like to talk about the back of the knuckles, right? If you feel along the back of your knuckles, you should be able to feel ribs or spine with your puppy with about the same intensity. Mm-hmm. If you feel along the opposite side of your knuckles, the palm of your hand,
right,
and you feel how pudgy that is compared to your actual knuckles, that is probably putting on a little bit too weight. Oh, especially you. You got pudgy reverse side knuckles. No, I'm just kidding. A lot of the times, just talking to somebody else other right. than yourself.
Yes.
And saying, hey, can you assess my dog's right. weight yeah. for me? Because a lot of times we're biased.
Right, yes.
Or not intentionally biased, but we get used to looking and feeling a certain mm-hmm. way with our puppies. And sometimes an external opinion is really helpful.
Is, yes.
That.
Yes.
Okay. Next question. Drum roll. What kind of treats do you recommend for puppy training? Thank you for posting all of these very helpful videos. Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad you're enjoying yes. our videos. We have like 1,000+ training videos on our YouTube channel. And then we've got lots of podcasts, mm-hmm. lots of years of podcasts yes. as well. So lots of content to be had. I've forgotten the question actually.
About what types, kind of treats? What treats?
I think we pretty much covered these.
Right.
When I go for high value treats, I like to use little pieces of cheese with my dog. Now that's because my dog really likes cheese, mm-hmm. but it's also because I like to use, I always joke about calling it the baby bird method of food delivery. Mm-hmm. I will put food in my cheek like a squirrel would, mm-hmm. and then I'll just either spit it or take it out with my fingers mm-hmm. if I don't feel comfortable spitting, and deliver it down to the dog. Right. And the reason that I do that is because it's a pocket in my face. And if my dog's...
That did sound funny. That's where Shannon keeps her car keys, too.
Yeah. So for those of you who have fed your dogs using either a bait pouch or your pocket, you start to realize that they go, oh, I'm looking at that pocket. My dog's looking at that pocket a mm-hmm. lot.
Or they, and that's yeah, natural, and they right? watch your hand to see when your hand goes to yeah. the pocket. If your hand doesn't go to the pocket, well, I'm not going to pay attention.
Exactly.
But when your hand goes to the pocket, oh, I'll pay attention.
Yes, so, exactly.
Yes.
So why not use that to our advantage, right? We know dogs know where the value is. They mm-hmm. know where the value is coming from. They're paying attention mm-hmm. to that. So if I have the ability to say, you know what? I got some chicken wiener stuck here in my cheek and it might fall out of my mouth at any point for you to catch. Mm-hmm. Then chances are my dog's going to want to pay attention to right. my face. And then that creates a habit of mm-hmm. my dog paying attention to my face, right? Right? And mm-hmm. I love that. So I tend to use a lot of treats that I don't mind eating as well. What right. do you use for high value treats?
Well, it all depends on the dog.
Okay.
So I've had dogs that would think a Cheerio was a high value treat because they're walking stomachs.
Yep.
Whereas I've had other dogs where I've used, I would usually take a beef heart. I'd buy a beef heart at the grocery store.
That was for Cowboy, I bet.
For Cowboy, right? Yep. Yeah. And I would boil it, slice it up, dry it up a bit in the oven, dice it up. And it was a single ingredient treat that I knew where it came from. And a beef heart is pretty large. It makes a lot of dog treats.
Definitely.
And it does sort of taste like roast beef a bit in your mouth if you put it in your mouth while it's yeah. cooked. But yeah, she
loves
it.
Let us know in the comments yeah. below if yes. you'd be putting beef heart in your cheek or not.
Yeah, it's cooked. It's cooked. So that was one of my big go-tos. Something I don't want to put in my mouth, but dehydrated liver treats have a high smell to them. You can buy them at pet stores, and it's a single ingredient. I know it's healthy for the dog. Mm-hmm. I stay away from cold cuts, and I do stay away from yeah. hot dogs too, because we know that they're not good for humans.
It's
so
true.
And our dogs are much smaller, so I don't want to.
It's true.
Be putting a lot of hot dogs into them. So
yeah, yeah. I like to cut up pieces of chicken breast and things
right,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, or a fish-based treat has a strong smell. Dogs yeah. often love anything fish-based. I'll even sometimes buy as a separate kibble, a fish-based kibble, and I can use that as a treat as well.
Perfect. Yeah. Check out, do a search for tuna treats mm-hmm. on our McCann Dogs YouTube
yes.
channel, and there is a great recipe that will come up that most dogs love.
Right, yes. And they smell, because I can walk in our training hall, and if somebody's training with them, I can smell they have
Isn't
tuna
that
treats.
Funny?
So,
oh
yes.
Oh my gosh. All right.
Okay.
I have another question. She took the little one.
Yes, I did. This one is in reference to kale training targeting with 5. Is there a verbal cue for this as they advance? And how do you tell them to target, like door, etc.? How do you tell them what to target? Let's see. As she's a verbal cue as they advance. Mm-hmm. So I would use my yes to help the dog out. So if the dog is, if I have my hand out and I'm saying tap, mm-hmm. and the dog's looking a little bit hesitant, I'm going to yes motion towards that yeah. hand. Not sure, is that the verbal cue as they advance?
Quite possibly. I mean, I would say the verbal cue, you can use whatever you want.
Whatever you want. Are you saying like I could say tap, target.
Yeah, absolutely.
Elephant, like whatever you want to say. Yes.
I would put this on cue. So I think maybe they're asking if they should put it on a verbal cue or if just the visual of the handout is enough. And right. I personally put it on a verbal cue because a lot of the times if my dog's not paying attention and I say tap, that's what turns him towards
right,
me.
Yes.
So just putting my hand out wouldn't get that.
Right, so. Yes. Okay, so that's what the question meant. Mm-hmm. And also, how do you tell them what to target, like a door or that? I'll say what I've done with my dogs is I will get a chip lid off a Pringles can.
Yep.
And that's what I teach the dog to target. So I, after I've taught the palm target, I put that in my hand and now they're touching that. I've even maybe put a little duct tape X on it.
Okay.
So now the dog learns to target the little duct tape X. Yeah. So I can go around my house putting little duct tape X's on anything I want my dog to touch.
Yeah.
Because they recognize, oh, you touch where you see the duct tape.
Yep.
And rewarding that.
Exactly. And then you would just wean off of that during the training process. And you could put each of those things onto an individual cue. Mm-hmm. In our members only section, we are right now we're doing a month all about tricks, different ways to teach tricks, different methods to teach tricks, different tricks to teach, teaching by back chaining. There's so much great stuff going on mm-hmm. right now. And one of the tricks that a lot of people are playing with is teaching their dogs how to open a door, take out an item, bowl, mm-hmm. whatever you have it, and then close the door again. So teaching that initial, like, usually this is taught with back chaining, so teaching that initial close of the door mm-hmm. is usually the first step when you're working this. And a lot of the times you can very easily transfer a tap skill to any item by first having that item established for tap. I actually use an extendable fly swatter for this.
Right.
So I'll have the behavior of tapping the fly swatter on mm-hmm. command, and then I can use that fly swatter, and it's quite extendable. It mm-hmm. ends up going out, I would say, like, I don't know, 2.5 feet maybe? Like, right. it's got yeah. a good distance. So I can actually put that against a door, for example, and say tap, and then get that behavior going with the door, and then just slowly wean the fly right. swatter away. And the nice thing about that is it allows me to stay out of the picture, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where my hand can be a little bit harder to wean off of, I can have this extendable thing right. to use. And that's similar to mm-hmm. what you were talking about with the lid with the X's right. and whatnot.
It could even be like an extendable back scratcher.
Yeah.
Because that's quite small, the little absolutely. Hand part in it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And your dog will figure out how to reach out and mm-hmm. tap that thing if you just make it valuable for right. them. So mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. lots of fun. Lots of fun. Okay. There's the big one. What is the purpose? So this is in regard to targeting as well. What is the purpose of the first exercise? If there is a distraction outside and you see this to get their attention focused back at you, it's literally just for 1 second. Can somebody please explain how, when this would be helpful? This is a fabulous question. And we actually, I'm glad that this got asked because we talked about the hand tap as a means of getting that attention back to you. But what we're essentially doing is we're re-engaging our dogs, mm-hmm. right? So yes, if the only thing that my dog knows in life is that hand tap, mm-hmm. chances are I'm going to get a quick hand tap and then he's going to be gone again. Right. However, this is one piece of a bigger puzzle, mm-hmm. right? So yeah, I'm teaching my dog to hand tap, but I'm also teaching him how to look at me. I'm teaching him how to walk in control position, which is at my side. I'm teaching him how to sit when he's asked to. I'm teaching him how to give me sustained attention.
Right.
Like all of these things are contributing to my puppy or my dog understanding that engaging with me is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And if you have not trained a dog fully before from start to finish and gotten to that end point, it might be really obscure to try to think about how the hand tap contributes to this. But if you've done some training with a dog before, you start to put together all the pieces of what makes them tick and what makes that individual dog give you better focus and what sort of engagement that individual dog likes so that they will continue to give you attention. So the tap is one way of getting my dog's attention quickly, and I might use it several times, right? So in that scenario that I talked about us passing another dog on the street, mm-hmm. I might be going tap, 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 and mm-hmm. I might yes and reward those things. And right. then before I know it, my dog has passed that other dog. And again, in that moment, maybe he's only given me that single shot of tap before he's back to doing his own thing. Likely he's not. If I'm asking for multiple taps in a row, chances are he's probably sustaining his focus on me at that point. He's at that point in his training. But having, you know, let's say he's not for a second. And let's say that I am getting that momentary attention from the tap. Well, now I at least know I can break through. Right? So my dog is distracted. I can break through by saying tap. And then once he's tapped, I say yes and I reward that. And then I go, look at me. Because we've worked on that command. Right. He goes, okay, I can do that too. And then I reward that. And then maybe I say, get in and sit. You know, it's not necessarily the fix for anything.
Right. Yes.
It's a way of re-engaging my dog so that now I have his attention. I can give him more direction at that point to begin with, or I can just use this engaging little tap game to help him recognize that walking past that dog without losing focus on me is a really, really beneficial and reinforcing thing. And then, of course, once I'm on the other side of that dog and the dog's in the distance and my dog's like, okay, well, the distraction's gone. Now I can just say, okay, and we can start walking again and I can let him get back to his thing. But
it's a bridge. It's
yes.
a bridge
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Help your dog, a bridge to better behavior.
Yep. And you could do this with just about anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could use a shake a paw as your sort of northern star
right,
to say,
yeah.
this is the most valuable thing in the world. If you shake a paw with me, wonderful things are going to happen, because after the shake, now I can stand up and say, get in. Or after the shake, I can call my dog's name and back away.
Right.
You know, if I've got his attention to begin with, I can move into other things. I can reinforce and create the habit of engaging with me when there's distractions, when there's other things going on, when there's not distractions even. I can practice these valuable little scenarios that make my dog go, oh, okay, tap means engage with you. Because eventually, unless I go tap, he taps and then he goes back to his thing and there's no real engagement. Yeah, sure, it's only going to be a 1 second thing.
Right.
But as long as I've created the habit of now engaging with me from that tap, I'm going to be way further ahead.
Yes.
So... All right. Any other wonderful words of wisdom? Oh, you're stifling a yawn.
I am. Yes, yes. It's getting late in the day for me.
It's time for us to go to bed. So on that note, thank you so much for watching. I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swati.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at mccanndogs.com. Happy training!